We're going to slide this back and forth on this. What's today's date, the 16th?
16th.
Today is Saturday, October 16th. We're taping the third of the speaker series in Red Bank, New Jersey. This is an OA journey through the big book, OA speaker series. And Jennifer?
Yes. Hello, everybody. My name is Jennifer. I'm a compulsive overeater and a relapse survivor.
Hi, Jennifer.
I would like to extend to you the very, very warm welcome of the Red Bank Saturday Big Book Study meeting that usually meets at this time from 10 to 11. I have lived in five different states, and I've been to OA in each of them. And although the faces are different, the recovery, the love, the spirituality is the same. And when I walked in the doors of this meeting the first time about 17 months ago, I immediately knew that this was going to be my home meeting. I hope that y'all enjoy the atmosphere of the room. I hope you enjoy the spirituality here. Where's Gay? Gay, raise your hand. Gay is our newcomer greeter for today. If we have any newcomers today who have questions or want to talk to someone in OA after the meeting, Gay has volunteered to stay and do that. And that's all I have.
Hi, welcome.
Okay.
Bring the thingy. No, slide it down, Leanne.
Oh.
All right. Welcome to this speaker series on the recovery process from the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Would those who care to join me in the serenity prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
This is a six-week speaker series from OA members who have experience with the recovery program from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This study's purpose is to encourage OA members to consider having the experience of doing the steps out of the Big Book. It is our experience the program of recovery from the Big Book has strengthened our resolve or solved our problem. We hope that this speaker series will inspire you to have this experience. During the 6 weeks, we will be presenting the instructions on the program of recovery by sharing our own unique experiences. Many new and returning members have found the intense focus and the insight gained by the strong message of recovery and hope offered in the Big Book can cut through their internal resistance and doubt. Another purpose of this series is to share the solution that the Big Book offers, that it may better help us carry the Big Book message to those who still suffer. This is a 90-minute meeting. This meeting will consist of the speakers sharing on their experience this week on steps 5 through 7 with the recovery process by working the steps out of the Big Book. Later, we'll be passing the donation in accordance with the seventh tradition, and the week here sign-in sheet is available at the front door. Feel free to take any contact information you desire. We want to encourage you to attend the entire speaker series. Mark and Leanne have come here today to share their gift of recovery with us. We believe this gift is so valuable that we can't live without it. You will hear them share their experience and how it's changed their lives profoundly. They found a new freedom that is permanent recovery so long as they follow a few simple rules. And Mark, would you like to go first today?
With me. Good morning, I'm Mark, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, and my home meeting is the Monday night Highland Park meeting. And let's see, we're going to talk about steps 5 through 7 today. I did work my steps using the Big Book with a sponsor, and the format that I followed was based on the Back to Basics workshop that some of you may be familiar with. Every once in a while, a meeting will host Back to Basics. It's like a 5-week intensive step study. I didn't complete all my steps in 5 weeks, but but that's the general format I use, so that'll be from where my perspective comes from. So I do have some notes, and there's some handouts, and the handouts were essentially plucked right from the Back to Basics handouts, and along in there is a sample that I wrote of some of the work that I had done in my 7 steps, so we'll talk about that as we go through. All right, step 5. admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Dissecting apart exactly what that means, notice it says the exact nature of our wrongs. Not only do we need to admit what we've done, but we also need to know why we did it, and to ask God for help with it, in order to find a better way to handle situations next time. The work that we did in our fourth step prepares us for what we're about to do in our fifth step. When I did my fourth step, there's a grid that comes with the Back to Basics, where you list out your resentment, what it affects in you, the harm that it caused to others, and what you can do differently based on that. That's essentially what I did, which is based on the example that you see in the big book when you look through. And when I did it, I'm a very detail-oriented person. I'm a perfectionist, especially before I did the steps. And I had a binder. I typed everything in, and I had a binder that was about this thick, you know, half those, maybe two-thirds of the thickness of the big book. Tiny 8-point font, you know, spaced very close together. I had so many pages of fourth step in there. And, you know, the big book, the example in the big book doesn't show that. It shows, you know, I was mad at Mr. Brown, you know, because he loves my wife or something like that. It's a very simple, straightforward thing. You know, whatever works for you is what I say. I don't regret doing it that way. Maybe my sponsor does because she had to hear all that. But for me, that was just a very, very, that was the key to my program, was doing that fourth step. Really looking back at my behavior over the years. I'll talk some more about that. Step four, step five, a lot of these steps, they're about taking action. From the Back to Basics, there's a couple of things that spoke to me, so I'll read some of those. They say that chapter 6 of the big book is called Into Action, and it's not called Into Thinking, Into Hearing About What to Do, or Into Telling Others What to Do, or Into Studying, but it's called Into Action. And the big book highlights what that action is. It says that we put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory, which is what we did in our fourth step, and that these items are about to be cast out. That's a promise in the big book. And all this requires action on our part. And when we complete it, we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another person the exact nature of our wrongs. And by wrongs, basically it's meant that whatever blocks us off from our higher power and other people. What it suggests is that before we meet with the person, that we take some time at a place where we feel our higher power strongly and share our inventory with your higher power, whatever that means to you. Maybe there's something that you didn't see before, that once you're alone in this quiet place, you and your higher power, you'll gain some more insight before you face the other person, and you begin to feel a sense of forgiveness, and you gain a little bit of understanding and trust in yourself, which may help you be more honest when you actually talk to the person that you're going to be giving your fourth step to. And when you do that, you're admitting to somebody else what you've done, and you begin to experience a humility. You can trust again when you tell some of these dark secrets to other people, and you gain more of an inner working understanding of yourself. The big book warns that a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient, so these steps can't be worked alone. If you look through the steps, look at how many times you see the words we, or, you know, another person is mentioned, or your higher power. And the big book says that if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome food addiction. It says, we haven't learned enough humility, fearlessness, honesty, in the sense that we find it necessary until we told somebody all our story. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we are expect to live long or happily in this world. That's the reason why the Big Book says that we do this step. We need to share it with another person because, at least for me, I had all these justifications for why I was the way I was, and I excused my own behavior. And it's very easy to do. That's very easy to do. But once I see it all out on paper and I look at it and I share it with somebody, I realize, wow, you know, this behavior is, it's not sane, it's not rational, you know, and it's got to stop. The insanity of the overeating, when you see it out on paper, it's, you know, and when I see all the harm that I've done based on my own addiction, it's, I can't ignore it anymore. There are no, there's no hiding from it. From the Big Book, I tremble to think what somebody might have observed, meaning while I was overeating. I push these memories inside, which basically means ignoring the peace of God within, and I hope they'll never see the light of day. I'm under constant fear and tension, which leads to more compulsive eating. And yeah, that was certainly me. I always ate in secret. You know, if you saw me out with friends, I'd either be eating nothing or, you know, have a couple pieces of vegetable on my plate or something. And, you know, I can't lose the weight. I don't understand why. But it was at home. It was at night when I thought nobody was looking. You know, it was in my car, you know, and I didn't have tinted windows, so I don't know who I was fooling. But, you know, in my car was this little safe bubble where I could overeat while driving down the road. You know, and it did cause constant fear and tension. You know, not just the eating did that, but just my whole outlook on life, and just my behaviors and my fears. So part of the fifth step is to get rid of that and to put some of that away and to start feeling your higher power enter yourself. When the Big Book was written, the thought was that it might fall into the hands of somebody who had no AA in their hometown, as AA was just beginning back then. We're lucky that we have such a large fellowship, especially around here, where we don't need to really leave the fellowship to find somebody to give our fifth step to. The Big Book says, you know, as long as we find somebody who's who understands what we're doing and supports us in what we're doing and is closed mouth, that it's a good person to share it with. Most of us find a sponsor and share our fourth step with that person. When I first started the program, I had a sponsor who I felt, you know, a kinship to. You know, he was a man, had a lot of similar experiences to what I had. And when I look back, honestly, when I started my fourth step, I had it in my mind that I was going to be telling this person this stuff. And there were certain things that, in my mind, I felt comfortable sharing, you know, because I knew that I was sharing it with this person, and I trusted this person along the lines of what I was sharing. And one of the lessons I learned is that, you know, this is about me purging this stuff for myself. It's not about the other person. It's about clearing my conscience with my higher power, and this person facilitates my doing that. And at some point, this person couldn't be my sponsor anymore, and I found somebody else. You know, she's a woman. She's 10 years older than me with kids. You know, we didn't have that much in common, except the one thing that really bound us together was our common struggles with this disease. And she worked a really kick-ass program, so I felt very comfortable sharing my inventory with her, even the stuff that I had originally thought, well, I'll tell this guy this stuff and he'll understand. And she didn't understand. And she deserves sainthood. As I said, this thing was so thick. And they suggest that you try to share your fifth step with somebody all in the same day, all in one day, so that you can really get a full understanding of what your actions had done, and to really make it intense. I don't know many people who've actually done that. I couldn't do that. At that time, I was living far away. She was living up in North Jersey. And we would get together after our meeting on Thursday at, after 9:30 at night, and talk for as long as I could without falling asleep. And I don't know how she did it. Her eyes were very, intense and focused, and they looked kind of glassy. And I was like, "Are you okay?" She's like, "No." But you know what? It wasn't because she was falling asleep. It was because she was connecting and listening so much that her eyes were kind of welling up, because she understood where I was coming from. And that was a real gift for me, to have somebody so understanding and so interested in what I was saying, and to have somebody relate, And some of the stuff I was most afraid of to share with her, she shared some stories from her past. And I realized, hey, we're not so different after all. I gained a really good program friend out of that, and it was a good experience for me. Part of the fifth step promises in the big book on page 75 say we can look the world in the eye as we move on our way towards recovery. This is paraphrasing here. And it says we're in the process of having a spiritual awakening, that the obsession to overeat is being removed. I brought some of the handouts from the Back to Basics workshop, and I like pictures. There's a good picture. Let's see where it is. It's on page 6, thank you, of your handouts. And as you see, they draw a little diagram here, and the foundation, the center of the program, is steps 1, 2, and 3 that we build our program on, and they say that that's a spiritual aspect of the program, and steps 4 through 7 are a mental aspect of the program, and steps 8 through 9 are a physical, social aspect. Those are where we start working with other people and confessing our wrongs to other people. So by working through steps 5 through 7 and step 4, we really get a good understanding of what's going on in our mind, what has been going on in our mind. And after going through that whole mess with her, we were able to find patterns in the resentments, the fears, and the harms that I've done, and I was able to write down all these patterns. I had this big, thick, giant list of resentments, fears, and harms. We were able to jot it down on a single piece of paper what the common threads were through the whole thing, which were the things that I had to work on, and it was a lot more manageable having a single sheet of paper than having 80 pages. So it really set the foundation for the remainder of the steps. Now it says here that after we do our fifth step, to try to take an hour reviewing what we did, thank our higher power that we're learning more about ourselves, that we're learning more about truth and love, and that we're getting to know our higher power better, and that sets us up for the spiritual steps that are coming. My sponsor told me to do that. I got on my bed and I fell asleep, but I did try. And it wasn't, when I finished the fifth step, it was a good experience. For me, it wasn't this grand spiritual awakening. you know, but as I look after the fact, you know, I realize that what I couldn't see in myself at that time was something pretty miraculous for me. And when I moved to my sixth step, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. My sponsor encouraged me to just jump right in and do it. If the pages in the big book, there's only maybe two paragraphs in the big book that talk about step six and seven. And I was already with my grid and my pen and paper trying to become willing and ready to write down my defects. And she said to me, you know, let's not over-labor ourselves. You know, you learned that one of your defects already is your perfectionism and your, you know, your overachievement. So her point was not to belabor and to really just jump into it. Before I talk about the other steps, I wanted just to go over some of the diagrams here because I like the pictures. On page one of the handouts, they talk about the wonderfully effective spiritual structure. And they didn't make this up. They actually did some really cool research in the big book to come up with this. I'll try to highlight it. The big book tells us that as we're doing that quiet hour of meditation after our fifth step, to ask ourselves certain questions. Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? That's on page 75. And you may say, what the heck is he talking about? And the Back to Basics workshop tried to help us out with this. Any structure has a foundation, a cornerstone, and a keystone, like you see in the picture there. The stronger the foundation, the stronger the structure. In the chapter We Agnostics, Bill says we are building a wonderfully effective spiritual structure. And in Bill's story, he says, upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. So what he's saying is that willingness is the foundation on your journey towards your spiritual awakening. So willingness is your foundation to your structure that you're building. Then it says, believing is the cornerstone of our personality change. On page 47 in the big book, it says, we needed to ask but one question. Do we now believe, or are we even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? And it says, it has been proven that upon that simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So believing is the cornerstone. And the third step is where we're required to make a decision. On page 62 in the big book, it says, our decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God is the keystone of our personality change. And the keystone is the stone at the top that holds everything together. And it goes on to say, when we decided that God was going to be our director, that this concept became the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass towards freedom. So again, willingness is the foundation, believing is the cornerstone, decision is the keystone. So going back to those questions, is our work solid so far? Essentially, he's saying, have we admitted anything in steps 1 through 5 that could cause our structure to crumble? Are the stones properly in place? Do we have the willingness as our foundation and our belief as the cornerstone? And have we made a decision to let God direct our life, which is the keystone? Is our step 3 solid? Have we skimped on the cement in the foundation? Have we skimped on willingness? And have we tried to make mortar without sand? Have we tried to take the rest of the steps without really being convinced of the first step? So after sharing with your sponsor, it's suggested that you answer those questions to make sure that you've made no omissions in your steps so far. So that little diagram helps me to make sense of that, all those metaphors. I'm a very literal person. So all these steps they build upon one another. And steps in page 2 here, the handouts, it shows us how the steps build upon one another, and that the other steps 1 through 3, especially, and of course step 4, are really key that we have those in place before we go on to our 5th step. And the decision to turn our care over to our higher power is the most important part. Well, they're all important, but in order to be honest with ourselves when we're doing our 4th and 5th step, we really need to be sure where we are. And then the suggestion is that once you finish your 5th step, that you jump immediately into your 6th step. And the 6th step is just a matter of becoming willing to get rid of your personality defects. The good news is, if there are certain things you're ready to get rid of and certain things you're not, you can't use, well, it's kind of good and bad. You're not allowed to use that as an excuse to say, oh, sorry, I'm not 100% willing, I can't move on, I'll be stuck. The suggestion is to pray daily for the willingness, and it will come. They promise that it will come. But to go on to your step 7, with the rest of your defects you're ready to get rid of. So back to step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Again, before we move on, we make sure that we answer all those questions and that we're ready from our 5th step. And again, it shouldn't be a big deal. Once you've gone through all that work, I was able to see in my inventory the defects. They were all glaring out like little lights on the page. So I was really ready to move on. And the big important thing is that you make a beginning, you start, you keep trying. You know, we're not perfect, we're never going to be perfect, we're never going to get rid of all these defects all in one day, and some of them may crop up here and there. The 5th step, all the promises in the big book, they do come true. They never say they're all going to be all true at the same time, all at once, every single minute of the day. So it's work. You know, again, it takes action. You know, the idea is to strive for what God or your higher power would have you be, and to be forgiving when you stumble, because we're only human, and being addicts, that doesn't help. And it says that delay is dangerous, rebellion may be fatal. It's pretty extreme stuff. This is the exact point at which we abandon limited objectives and move towards God's will. On the big book on page 76, again it says, we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. And there are two questions, if you look in the big book on that page, that are basically your 6-step questions. You can have your sponsor ask these questions, or your sponsor can ask you these questions to have a more concrete way to move through your 6-step. The first question is, are we now ready to let God remove all these things that we have admitted are objectionable? And the second question is, once you've answered the first, are you ready for your higher power to take them all from you? And if you still cling to something that you won't let go of, to ask God for the willingness. And once you've answered those two questions, and you're like, yeah, okay, then that's pretty much all there is to the 6th step. And you're ready to move on to your 7th step. 7th step is, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And you may say, well, if I have my higher power take all this stuff away, then what's going to be left of me, you know? I love my defects, they're who I am. The idea is to ask for the removal of the defects, but have them be replaced with something else, which is what your higher power would have you do for yourself, have you do for others, have you do to be of service to your higher power. So that space that's left over, we want to have filled with the opposite of whatever defect it is that we're asking to be removed. So if we're struggling with selfishness, then we ask for unselfishness. If we're feeling dishonest, we want to ask for honesty, and so forth. Step four, page four of the handouts. There's some examples that are listed here. This is again from that Back to Basics workshop, and they give you some examples of personality defects, characteristics of self-will, whatever you want to call them, shortcomings. And to the right of those, each one they list a characteristic of God's will. So we're not asking you to really give up something, but a trade, and you'll find out that the trade isn't even, but it works in your favor. the idea is to practice the opposite of these defects of character. So it's more than just asking and just sitting back and waiting for God to take them away. But it takes worth. Faith takes practice. It's not just something that, you know, there's a difference in my mind between blind faith and faith. You know, blind faith for me is just saying, okay, God, have your way with me, and sitting back and expecting it to happen. But I learned through doing the steps this way that faith can actually take practice and work. And if I have the faith that I'm going to get these things, that I'm going to have my spiritual awakening, that I'm going to become a better person, that I'll feel that God is directed. If I just take that little bit of faith, then eventually it does come, and I can feel that it's real, and there's no blind faith anymore. The bulk of the seventh step in the big book is the seventh step prayer, which is on bottom of page four in the handouts. And I'll read it. Anybody who wants to can read along. The seventh step prayer says, My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And the third step prayer and the fourth and the seventh step prayer, when I don't know what to pray for, I just say those prayers over and over again. They're very similar in that we're trying to get rid of our disease, you know, trying to put our disease aside for a minute, trying to get out of ourselves so that we can find what our higher power's will is for us and carry that out. And if we're doing a good job, it comes naturally. For me, it's not work. You know, the work that I put in, I get back tenfold. And when I'm doing a service and I'm helping other people, the hope is that they're getting something out of it too. And that energy really feeds me. It doesn't become work. It actually becomes a great strength. So the suggestion is to stay, once you're working through the seven steps, to stay the third step prayer and the seven step prayer daily. And then in each morning, and when needed throughout the day, ask your higher power to replace these defects with God's will characteristics, and to practice the seven step ongoing. Page five, I have a little bit of a excerpt of the writing that I had done when I originally did my seventh step. And again, it just shows some of the defects that I struggle with and what I can replace it with. You know, this is how I did it. Doesn't mean that everybody has to do it this way. And a lot of this stuff is shorthand. It's my own personal way of jogging my memory as to what I need to do to turn around some of these defects. So what I would do is look through it in the morning, think about my day ahead, what struggles could I have? You know, I have that meeting at work, I have a speaking commitment on Saturday morning that I'm afraid of. And I actually look through and I say, okay, this is what I could be struggling with today. And I'll write down in my journal, you know, here's what I can do to replace that defect with something better, something that means that makes sense to me. So you notice I have fear in big bold letters. That's a big one, and it comes in many forms for me. You know, and the big thing for fear for me is to have faith and trust in higher power, to have faith and trust in this program, and ultimately have faith in myself, my ability to do God's will. And the big one is to have faith in other people, because I can't control them. This is how I did it. So again, there's no right or wrong way. The seventh step asks you to be humble. Humility is defined in some places as the awareness that we are willing to go through whatever God, wherever God takes us, to become God-centered. Humility is described as having to go through these growing pains to do a little bit of work, and again, to have that little bit of blind faith just to get you through that hard work, knowing that you're about to be going through a transformation into something more God-centric. For me, when I think about humility, I think of this big giant higher power all around me in the whole universe, and I think about how tiny I am compared to that. So any differences that there may be between us as people, at that level, they just melt away. And I'm filled with the overwhelming presence of a higher power. So there's no, you know, the ego falls away. You know, it's similar to the concept of anonymity in this program, how we're all equal. We don't talk about last names or social status. You know, we try not to go into what we do. And, you know, I'm a big, fancy, important person. Humility is the key to getting rid of some of these defects. And I've talked long enough. We have another speaker here, anxiously waiting to do her stuff.
Sure. Martha here, also a leader.
Margaret.
Just a few thoughts, and then we'll take a little break before our second speaker. Last week I had the privilege of getting up here and getting naked and talking about the fourth step. I wore extra clothing today, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the... Mark brought back a lot of memories, because I think we all tend to talk about our first inventory. It makes a lasting impression. And as sponsors, we learn to be able to sleep with our eyes open, I've discovered. Not really. I fired my sponsor right after I had done inventory work with her, but I truly thought that... I had turned over these character defects and was a new woman. And two or three weeks later, I went to my first retreat weekend down Long Beach Island. And I'm a bit of a coffee drinker, and it seemed like they never had any sweet and low out. This is a little coffee cup, and I keep going back in the kitchen and asking for sweet and lows. And finally on Sunday, after the 12th or 15th trip, gentleman there asked me how many I wanted, and I was getting them for the whole table. And I found myself standing there telling the stranger, well, I want one, and so wants two. And then I looked down and said, who the F made you the sweet and low police? And we started to argue in front of people. And brought up a lot of stuff to me. And I'm not much of a crier, but I cried and carried on after that retreat was over. Something fierce about... my character flaws were hanging out for everyone to see. It was okay to have them, but I didn't want you to see them. And a very kind woman said, but Margaret, at least you tried. And it really stayed, and she was right. I was trying to be different. I hadn't succeeded yet. So I discovered that I needed to give myself a lot more assignments to do. And I started to, that was when I started to practice the opposites. It says here, what I can replace my character defects with. And that has become an ongoing project for me to this day. Somewhere along the line, third, fourth year of abstinence and recovery, through a lot of prayer, praying for other people, something changed for me one day. And I felt as though God had stepped into my heart. And I felt a sense of warmth in my chest. And I felt a sense of forgiveness. Self-forgiveness, forgiveness by our power. I'm not quite sure what. But that feeling has never left me. And my sense of accountability for how I behaved has increased because of it. And this, again, is all out of that first fourth-step inventory. Because I started praying for other people as soon as I finished that inventory, because it tells you in the big book to pray. Didn't need a sponsor to tell me that. And I started the amends process as vigorously as I could. Because I, too, saw the connection, as Mark mentioned, with the multitude of problems that I had. I saw the interconnectedness. They could be boiled down to a few things. And one of them for me was self-amends. Self-amends were big on my list. I had treated myself very poorly in many respects. I started going to the dentist every week for over a year. I had neglected my mouth. I had neglected my health in every level. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in the condition that I'm in today. And I tried to do the opposite of what I had done before. But I found, like the food, unless I made commitments to do these things, they were just good intentions. So just like calling a sponsor and turning over my food, what I needed to say is, I'm going to do such and such. And then commit to doing it, not just, this is what I think I need to do, this is what I ought to do. So I learned the difference early through these steps, the difference between a good intention and a commitment. So today when I do commit my food today, and when I need to do something, like make a phone call, a difficult phone call, or be kind to someone in particular, or pray for someone, I put it on my food plan. And if I don't do those things that day, I'm not abstinent. And it works very well for me. So I try to think that this is a process, a continuing process, of moving closer to becoming the person that God intends me to be. And I keep notes in my AA 12 and 12 as to things I'm going to do on my next inventory. This willingness thing, we talk a lot about willingness when we first come in. I don't know if I'm willing to give up the food. I don't know if I'm willing to give up my character defects. Again, there's an interconnectedness. I want everything my way. Well, life has taught me that my way doesn't work well, as far as food goes and as far as how I behave and the kind of person I am. So I guarantee you, just sitting in a room for me was enough willingness. I didn't have to intellectualize it. Still don't. I believe that the surrender process by coming to the rooms is a manifestation of how willing I am today. So I go a lot of meetings to stay willing. Before we take a break, I'm going to tell you that the speaker series is being taped, and in November will become available on our Central Jersey website. You have the information on the cover sheet. The files can be listened to while online, downloaded to an MP3 format, or copied to a CD. And there's a place in the sign-in sheet that by the door that if you're not going to be able to come to all of the workshops and you'd like the handouts emailed to you, I'll email them to everybody on the list. We do have the group does have expenses in Red Bank beyond the regular for presenting this, including a lot of printing and flyers, so if you could be generous, it would be appreciated. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, and that suggested donation of $3 or more would really help this meeting continue to be self-supporting and perhaps in the future present another project. Someone put together a little Yahoo email list, and you have some purple handouts on your chairs, and it's also on your cover sheet, and the group would like to know what you think of this speaker series. Please don't critique my personality. This is a very general question. Or if you'd like to give me any suggested personality character defects to work on, feel free. And we're going to take a little break after we do the seventh tradition. Are the buckets passing around? Okay. Bathrooms are upstairs and on this level also. I leave this recording until the end, so if you're going to say anything, it will be on tape forever. No, Kim will hear it, that's all. It'll be edited out. I don't know what happened to Kevin. Kevin is our facilitator.
Oh.
I just thought I was filling in until he got here.
Hi.
Hello, honey.
Do you know anyone who's going to that game night tonight?
Matt.
Who else? Anybody?
Me.
You're going?
Yes.
Okay. How many go to that?
It just started last week.
Really?
This is only the second month. We don't have a following yet.
Okay. All right. And how far from here would you say it is?
I have no idea.
Oh, you never went?
No. I've never driven to Highland Park.
Did you ask for anyone?
Where do you live?
Oh, okay. I thought you pointed to
I live north of Woodbridge Shopping Center.
Okay. No, I'm in Middleton.
I don't really, can't really tell you that.
Okay, well, the address though is on there. I can ask staff.
I ask
GPS.
Ask Matt if he has the flyer for directions.
Yes. Okay. Because, you know, a friend of mine came here last week and today she said, you know, I can't be dependent upon somebody else. If they come, I come. If they don't, I don't. Because I've got to get well. And she didn't want it. She's too sick to go to game. I didn't really like playing the games. I played them on my iPod.
Okay, well, I guess that's good for you to go to, yeah.
Lonely to me.
Well, the woman who helps Matt out with it can't go every month. So I had told Judy that if she couldn't go, I would go. Okay. This is my first time going tonight, too.
I'll bring some games with me. I have a game I bought at the AA convention this year that's an AA game. Would that be appropriate?
Sure, why not?
Just change it. The guy was an AA that made it. It looks like...
I'd like to see it.
A regular... I haven't even opened it yet, but he said when I was looking at it that you even have a proof conscience before the game starts to see how much these monies you should be given when you start the game, like on Monopoly.
Sounds cool to me.
Yeah.
You need some help? No, I just got to stand up.
What did you do with your leg?
It's my back.
Oh, your back. Some movie star said getting old isn't for sissies. I'm starting to really, really see that now. So you could come here, even though you haven't committed to the abstinence yet, right?
What do you mean?
Well, like, I'm coming here, but I don't have that willingness to stop.
Oh, of course, you can come.
20 years. I hope it doesn't take me that long.
I hope so, too.
This last 10 pounds, I help him puff. Everywhere I go, it's terrible. I love taking walks. There's no more.
So I hope to see you tonight.
Okay. 7 o'clock.
Yes, Matt, if he has it. Hey, Matt, do you have a games night flyer?
Here, my dear.
Would you print the last names in?
I'm crossing out.
Maybe if you mention it, more people will go.
Perhaps.
I don't know Mark's last name.
I do.
I know it's. I have it on my email, but I don't remember.
I got
it
the date for the next one. Yes, Mark.
I know Flyer.
Oh. Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
I have one.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
The next one's the Saturday. This is the tonight, and then we have it the next. All the dates are listed underneath. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling her. Well, I have a
So I was totally unprepared to do
I'm
any yada yada today.
International convention.
Oh, wow.
I haven't opened it yet, but an AAer made it, and it's got steps, I think, and
wow.
It has a group conscience.
So you got a little nervous about today, huh?
Yeah, it's great.
How many were here last time?
Chris and I were a wreck coming down here last Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, good. How honest are we going to be? As honest as we have to be. I had four people call me after we left here between then and Tuesday about doing inventory work. And
them, and they basically said, you sound like somebody who's either done it all or heard it all. I think I'd be comfortable sharing with you.
Yeah.
So I got together with one of the ladies and got her going with the writing process. The other one I'm going to see on Wednesday. And the other two are ready.
It will.
It wasn't what I was looking for, but it keeps me off the streets. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I only have two sponsors, right?
I sponsor a lot.
I was so hungry. It was so cold
here.
So maybe I'll get one out of this.
I don't work. I have some time, but this was a little over the top for me. It was a little. I wasn't comfortable saying no because we had come here to do this.
I have jobs.
It didn't work out.
Okay, I remember a girl that's known me from high school.
Now
a month or two ago. She's thinner than in high school.
Mitchell,
it makes me feel fat. I just felt it myself. But she goes, I was going like this, and she says, you know, you've always done that. You always snag people. I didn't notice that. What is the prize center?
It's the big prize center in Highland Park.
Oh, it is.
Yes. Okay. It's open to the public, so it's open to everybody who wants to come. That's why. Yeah, I knew that. We have a meeting Monday night. Book meeting Monday night there, 7:30.
Have you ever thought about putting the speaker back in the format on the Monday night meeting?
So that's why it's my way. It's open to the public. I don't think whatever you are on
the
I don't know, the Monday meeting seems to be doing real well, so I have the attitude of people. That's the thing. We've got enough alone.
No, there's everybody.
Yes, she does seem to be doing well.
My number's on there if you have any questions.
Can you go straight through to 11:30?
Yeah. Are we going to take questions at the end?
Not unless you really understand me.
Well, I mean, I thought that it was a good thing to have the questions. It felt like there was a ton to come in.
Service folks!
We're going to continue with the rest of our speaker series this morning. We have one brief announcement this evening at the Prize Center in Highland Park. We have our second monthly OA Games night from 7 to 9 p.m. $5 donation is asked for, and it's a handicapped accessible building. It's supported by Central Jersey Intergroup. We're trying this out. We call ourselves the people who have no life. No, I'm only kidding. It's another way to have a little fun and fellowship with other OAers, and you're welcome to bring friends or family members should you desire to. That's 7 to 9 p.m. tonight. Now, I'm going to introduce our next speaker, Leanne, from many, many miles away, speaking on steps 5 and 7.
My name's Leanne. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi,
everybody. My story briefly is as follows. I came into the rooms on November 3rd, 2001. It wasn't until about 3 or 4 years later that I put together the fact that what took my eating to the critical pitch it got to, for me to be willing to walk through these doors, well, not these specific doors, but walk through my first meeting on my own steam, was the fact that I was in New York on 9/11. And I knew a lot of people that had a lot of real narrow escapes. And I got to the point where my binges were so extreme that I honestly couldn't understand what was going on. I had no idea. I had no basis to figure out what this was. And I did know that I had to find something. I had to get out of the behavior that I was in that I could not stop. I was powerless. I was completely powerless. I knew about OA because my mother's best friend, and I don't even remember when this was, probably early 20s, my mother's best friend took me to an OA meeting, and I thought it was really weird. I didn't get the way that meetings are structured with the ebb and flow. I didn't get how shares are not conversation. I didn't understand anonymity. And I totally was completely perplexed. But what this tells me is that people saw the seeds of my behavior well before I got to that point in 2001 when I was in my late 40s and I realized something had to be done. So I found myself in my first meeting. For about 3 months, I sat there with tears rolling down my face. I could not open my mouth. I could not put a coherent sentence together. I'm trying to figure out what this whole sponsorship thing was, and I asked after that meeting. This was my home meeting, by the way, which is Cranford Saturday morning. I asked, so what is the sponsorship thing about, when I could finally speak? And nobody explained what it was. This wonderful woman looked at me and she said, oh, Leanne, I'll be your sponsor. Gulp. And she said, so what you're going to do is you're going to write down what you're going to eat tomorrow. And you're going to do a writing. And you need this. And she handed me a big book. And she said, you need to start reading this. And I was just okay. And we went through the first 30 days of writing based on the big book, the OA 12 and 12 and the AA 12 and 12. And I still do that with sponsees today. And it started a voyage of discovery for me because I had never looked at how I was or who I was until that point. I had so much crap spinning around in my head that it's a miracle that I could hold down a job, frankly. It was a miracle that I was able to, you know, establish a long-term relationship with someone I've now been married to for over 20 years. It's a miracle. I was not a functioning human being in the normal sense of the word. And the steps provided a structure for me to figure out why I ate as I did. The big book has a word for why I ate as I did. I have an allergy to certain foods. So today I choose not to eat sugar, wheat, or flour because those foods trigger reactions in me. I choose not to eat processed foods because I don't know what they put in this stuff. But if it comes in a cardboard box with a piece of cellophane on the top and purports to be a meal, it's not a meal for me. I do weigh and measure my food. I don't bring my food to events. But I do call ahead. And I don't bring scales to restaurants, but I do cut things in half and take things home. And, you know, it's made an enormous difference. But I could not today be abstinent without having done the work according to the steps. And I wanted to build on what Mark was pitching. I've done the Back to Basics series. We hosted it in Cranford once or twice. I don't remember now. I have done part of that pitch. It's a really beautiful format. If you haven't gone, you should go. At least I got a lot out of it. But I used to live in a state of denial. Denial is not a river in Egypt. Denial is don't even notice I am lying. I had a reason for everything I put in my mouth. I was entitled to have it. I had it coming to me. I deserved it because they were, insert word here. Coming in and getting a sponsor when I was finally, had one thrust upon me, and just being told that simple thing you're going to write every day, and that's just what you're going to do. And, you know, every sponsor since that time has told me the exact same thing. That they would not work with me if I didn't write every day. I'm not really good at firing sponsees because I certainly have had my ups and downs. I have not been continuously abstinent since the day I walked in and got program. But I'm currently more than 2 years abstinent, and I'm currently down, I was somewhere in 50 plus pounds, and I don't get on the scale every day. I don't move it over two tiles. I don't pee before I weigh myself. I don't stand on my tippy toes on the right corner of the scale. It is what it is. The weight is what it is. What I have to do is I have to work the steps, and I have to work my program. And if I don't do that, then I will continue to gain weight because I'll be binging because I can't keep my hands off the food unless my spiritual house is in order. So when I came in, I did my first fourth step with that first sponsor, and she took my fourth step in her kitchen, and she had dimmed the lights, and she had candles burning, and it was absolutely wonderful. And she just sat there, and she smiled. And all she did was bear loving witness and pass no judgment, say nothing except, I know, I know. And I knew that she knew. And what came out of that fifth step was the instructions, as in the big book, to go and do the sixth step, go and do the seventh step, and then move on into the amends process. So I did this the first time through. I did it according to the big book. I did the grid. I did the pages. I did the sheets. I didn't get the whole thing about looking for patterns in that fourth step. And then the second fourth step I did, I went through the OA workbook, and I did 155 writing questions on the fourth step that I found online. There are multiple versions of this. And I wrote on every question with the exception of a handful that I really, really couldn't hook into. And I started seeing stuff come up, you know, some patterns. I started seeing patterns. That second fourth step, I did the grid again. And instead of being all about resentment, this one was all about fear. The fear was down so deep and was so patinaed over with a layer of resentment and angst and aggression, really, that I didn't even know the fears were there. Then I did that fourth step, and I was rocked back. I'm like, oh, my God, how can I function? How can I move forward? Well, you know, the big book talks about being the hole in the donut. Sorry for the food reference. But that's what it says. It talks about being the hole in the donut. And working with sponsees, I have learned that people have this persistent dread about the words defects of character. And, you know, for me, they're just character traits. And what I have done is I have taken them to excess. So I have rendered myself out of balance in these specific ways. So if I consider myself to be stubborn, and I do, if I moderate that behavior, I become persistent. Persistence is a virtue. It's a good thing to be able at work to say, you know, I'd like to remind you that I really need that stuff back from you. When do you think you could get it back to me? It works. People are afraid to ask more than once. I'm not. Not shy about it. I have the balance to know more appropriately when I can ask again and how to ask so that I'm not asking mean. Stubbornness can even be a virtue. I had a sponsor for many years who shared with me when her brother died. She said to herself with her teeth gritted, I will not pick up over this. I will not dishonor that memory. Stubbornness is not always a character defect. It can be moderated to persistence, and then it can be a character asset. So what I'm trying to do when I do step 6 and step 7 work, I'm trying to realize that I need to pull myself into balance. The big book tells me that I need to be useful to myself and my fellows. The big book tells me that I need to pray rightly. The prayers are not that my favorite prayer. God, please let me eat whatever I want and be thin. Amen. Thank you. Okay? That's not my prayer anymore. My prayer is, you know, I'm really blocked because. Please help me be willing to move past this, and please show me the way. Because if I'm blocked, then I can't be useful. I can't be present in my life. I can't be useful to my kids. I'm not a functioning person at work, and I certainly can't do service and program at any kind of level that I want to do it. So when I think about step 6 and 7, step 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. The third step is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. They're the same thing, only different. It's about making a decision or coming to a turning point and having a different perspective about where we were and how we used to do stuff and how we want to go forward. You know, step three, I can make a decision until I'm blue in the face. If I do not take the action, when I feel myself getting all wrapped up in an outcome, I know, man, if I do this, I'm going to get that. I know it. I can feel it. I have to open my hands and open my heart and take a deep breath and just let it go. If I have done all I can, then I've done all I can. All I can do is what I can. Someone told me in the rooms that God does not put my sneakers on to get me to a meeting. And that's the best illustration for me of where the line is between what I can do and what God can do. When I'm stuck, I can ask for help, but I have to ask. Ask and ye shall receive. Seek and ye shall find. I'm not a big Bible thumper, but I really relate to the big book because it has taught me so much about where the line is between what I am able to do and what God is able to do for me that I cannot do for myself. So when I look at that parallel, becoming entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Okay, so academically, right, in the big book we've talked, there's a page and a half on step 5, 6, and 7. It's in page 75 and 76. If you don't believe me, look it up. It's amazing how short these are. When I found myself being ready but not yet releasing, my sponsor at the time said, well, you know, we can do some deeper work on step 6. And I said, well, what is that? So in your handout on the back page is what we did. And I wrote this up. The 12 and 12 of Overeaters Anonymous on page 56 and 57. Being entirely ready means that we are completely willing, there's that word again, to recognize and let go of our defective behavior patterns, not defects of character, like this one better, and to let God change us as God will, letting go of those outcomes, right? I don't get to say how I come out of the other end of this process. We don't set the timetable or method for these changes. Our work is to do what we can to make ourselves ready. So here's where we put on the sneakers. In steps 4 and 5, we took a long, hard look at each trait and acknowledged it as part of our lives. Now we ask ourselves what it is doing for us as well as what it is doing to us. We search out our reasons for hanging on to each trait. Perhaps one has been a readily available source of comfort, while another has added excitement to our lives, and a third has compensated for our lack of self-esteem. Every character defect we have today has been useful to us at some point in our lives, and we need to recognize that fact. I know people that have survived abuse that say that they needed to eat or they would not have made it through. Well, if you get support and you get some healing and you get some growth and you go to therapy or whatever it takes to get rid of some of those trauma scars and get them to the point where you can stand being in your own skin again, it gets to the point where the food is a crutch that we don't need anymore. And I don't know why I got stuck in the food. I have asked myself this question. I there's a phrase called analysis paralysis. When I came in, why? And some days it would be, why me? And some days it would be, why this? And some days I would just want to know why. I would want to know, show me why. I don't have any trauma. I don't have any sexual abuse. I had loving parents. They never argued. There was no alcohol. Beats the hell out of me, okay? For today, I need to accept and be willing to deal with where I find myself. And I find myself with food addiction. And that's just the way it is. And I need to have boundaries around my food, and I need to have boundaries around my behavior. Next, we need to recognize that each of these old tools for coping with life has now outlived its usefulness. We look at the harm it is doing us to cling to each of these ways of thinking and acting. As we had to hit bottom with our eating behavior, so now we need to hit bottom with each of these traits. Only when we fully realize they are costing us more than they are giving us do we become entirely ready to be rid of our defects of character. So if you want to do a little more deep work on steps 6 and 7, if there's that pesky thing that keeps coming back, or if you just need something to write about for a few months, this is an option. I write every day. I'm always looking for an assignment. When I got this assignment, I'm like, oh, goody. So I made my list, as has been discussed by Mark. Things pop out. You know, when you're doing your fourth step and taking a fifth step, you see patterns in behavior. You see ways of dealing with life that you've used over and over again. And it becomes clear for me. Denial was a big one. Entitlement, expectation. I really thought that I knew where someone was coming from. I really had a lot of investment in expectations that people would behave in a predictable way. I expected that everybody used the same yardstick to measure things by that I did. Come to realize it's completely not true. Who knew? Who knew? I'm big on grandiosity. I'm big on judgment and comparisons. Mm-hmm. Like to gossip. When this stuff comes up, what do I do? What do I do? I have to look at it. First, I have to get the awareness that I'm back into a behavior that I said that I was entirely ready to release. Remember this, right? Well, this is post-sixth step. I said I was entirely ready, all right? But here I am doing it again. It's that mindfulness that brings me back into the realization that there's more I can do, and I can ask to have it be lifted. But I have to look at why I'm still holding on to it. So you make a list. The list should be based upon the fourth and fifth step observations. Your sponsor may have input there. You know, if you have that, you know, daily call habit, there's going to be stuff that comes up over and over again. And sponsors have a tendency to recognize this. All right. My sponsor then told me that just because I had a list of my stuff didn't mean that I should assume that that was it. And on this last page, I went through the literature, and in the AA Big Book, Chapter 5, How It Works, the AA 12 and 12 on page 66 and 68, and the OA 12 and 12 on page 34 to 43, 43, are some character things, character traits, character qualities, whether you like them or not, that you may be practicing. And it's good to make that list, too, and to go through that and write essays about, you know, the extent to which you demonstrate those characteristics. So actually getting into the essay. At the top of the page, I write whatever it is, what the character trait is. Then I talk about, when did I start to do this? You know, when did I start to have this become a big part of my life? Where was I at that time? Can I even remember? Sometimes I've had it for so long that I honestly don't know. But the point is to try and figure out that there is a reason for me to be using this behavior, and that this behavior was supportive at a point in time. And then I need to talk about how that behavior is no longer supportive. I mean, gossip for me gets me into negativity. It gets me into feeling like I'm better than. Humility, I love the thing in the Big Book. It says that I am neither above nor below others on some imagined ladder of worth. And that's where I want to be. I just want to be a person among persons. You know, I'm not better than you or worse than you because I make more or you make more. You know, I used to spend all this time in these comparisons, these empty, meaningless bullshit comparisons. I used to think, well, boy, you know, she's really popular. And I should have brought a picture. I was goofy looking. There'd be the class picture, and then here would be Leanne, and then here would be the other kids' heads. I was just really tall, really early. And I wasn't heavy until college, because I have pictorial proof. I'm not someone that says, well, when I got married, I was a size 10. And then 2 years after that, I was a size 23. I can't do that. I don't remember weights. I don't remember sizes. Back to that whole denial thing. So I need to realize that I have this tendency to gossip because it makes me feel better. And that's not what I want to do. What I want to do is just feel where I am. I just want to be present, and I want that to be enough, and I want to be comfortable there. So when I gossip, I'm trying to climb up on somebody else's shoulders and step on their head and be better than. And the reason that I do gossip is because it filled some need in me, because I didn't have any other way to feel good about myself. So I would feel good about myself at someone else's expense, which is a pretty empty way for me to try and feel better. But when you don't know what you're doing or why you're doing it or that there's alternatives, then you're going to repeat that behavior. At least I certainly did. So when I realized that I'm starting to edge toward gossip, I need to stop, number one, and I need to have a strategy. And I really liked Mark's side by side on a page, because the essays really boil down to this, right? What am I going to do when the gossip hound of the entire office comes zooming over and pulls up a chair and says, "So did you hear?" What am I concretely going to do? This is exactly the same skill of visualization that I need to practice when I'm at an event and they bring out the insert name of really disastrously appealing food here. This is exactly the same thing. How do I turn away from that behavior that I have always done? How do I stop dishing? How do I? Well, you know, I wrote an essay about it, and I figured out I can redirect. I can, and I use that one probably the most often, and I just change the subject, redirect the conversation. I don't get preachy, because that doesn't usually go over terribly well. But I need to let go of that thought process that pulls me into that behavior, because that's the way I've always done it. That's the way I'm wired now. Doing something over time wires me to do it again. There's brain science on this, you know. I've read about it. I can't explain it very well. But doing other than involving myself in that gossip web, it gets me to realize that I have alternatives. And thinking about them ahead of time makes me a little quicker on my feet when the opportunity presents itself. So, what I guess I'd like to say is working through the character defect essays it wound up being about 3 to 4 months of writing. It really heightened for me, you know, where those things are that come up for me over and over and over again. And it gave me a much deeper understanding of why I have them and how often they come up. And they helped me to maintain my entire readiness. And, you know, I have to mention that writing every day is a priority for me, and I also have to pray for willingness every day. I made a food plan change. I had a new sponsor. My sponsor of many years picked up. My backup sponsor picked up. This was not a very much fun thing. And a woman stood up in a meeting, one of the other meetings I go to regularly, and said she was available. Now, this was someone that I didn't even like when I came to program. All right, and somewhere along the line, I did that exercise where you pray for a person for 2 weeks and wish them all good, and then all of a sudden you have this attitude change. The person's completely untouched by this, of course, but I rewired my head about this person, and now she's my sponsor. And she said, "Well, what food plan do you work?" And I, you know, sent her an email with the Word document of my food plan, and she says, "No, where is it written in a book?" So I made a food plan change. And, you know, I was working sugar, wheat, and flour free, but now I'm working sugar, wheat, flour free, and a whole lot other free stuff, too. She said, "That's better." And she said, "All we're going to do is we're going to do this for 30 days. And then we're going to reevaluate." So, you know, she already had an answer for me going into something and just dabbling and then pulling back. It's not a dabble. It's a commitment for 30 days. I can do 30 days. One of my other sponsors used to say, "I can get used to anything." Mm-hmm. You know. And I had to put down something that I ate every day at lunch. You know what? It's fine. It's fine. I don't even miss it anymore. Well, no, that's not strictly true. I would say about 5 days out of seven, I don't miss it anymore. You know, there's still that niggling, But the physical recovery is coming as a result of having put that serving down. And I have to be realistic, you know. I would like it to be otherwise, but it isn't. So if I climb myself out of denial and start looking at my behavior, looking at the stuff that comes up over and over, and really being willing to do whatever it takes to get rid of it, it becomes possible for me to put that thing down in the middle of the day. For me, my character traits and my out-of-balance condition reinforces the need to eat compulsively. And the compulsive eating removes me of clarity, completely makes any outrageous behavior okay, because I'm not even aware of what I'm doing. It's like I'm drunk on carbs. So for me, it's a big circle, you know. I've done some reading recently about becoming abstinent, and you have to be abstinent before you work the steps. And, you know, there's a chicken and the egg question. And I think everybody's got their own answer to that. But I think that I had to start working the steps, and I had to start getting rid of some of this junk that I was carrying around with me and start to understand the roots of my own behavior and the roots of my out of balance. I mean, I would push myself. I would procrastinate. I mean, this is a character defect essay. I would procrastinate because I get a tremendous adrenaline rush of pulling the rabbit out of the hat at the 11th hour. That's why. I'm an adrenaline junkie. Hello? Who knew? So I had this light bulb moment probably about 5 years ago. I realized that I would binge after going to the edge of the precipice and getting it done, delivering that, and then I would have a binge. And the binge would be more intense. So I not only have defects because I'm out of balance, I was like a child on a swing pushing myself out of that stable center where the swing hangs if you're not messing with it. I was pushing myself off so I would swing higher and further out of center. And that is the truth of where the food addiction came from. And I know I asked why, and I don't know why still. But I know that this mechanism is what operated in me for most of my life. And I'm happy today that I can recognize that little manic spiral starting, and I can pray, and I can breathe, and I can walk, and I can thank God that I don't have to go there anymore. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Leanne. When you talked about being an adrenaline junkie, I always call it my Don Quixote complex. I will right the unrightable wrongs. I will swing in there. I will neglect myself to the point of pain and eat afterward, of course, because it feels so good. I like the meetings where they use the World Service suggested format in sponsor identification, where people who are sponsors talk about what step they're currently working on or whether or not they've done inventory work. And I love when people share at meetings and talk about what step they're doing, because that's what this program is all about. It's not the perfectionism of finding a perfect food plan necessarily. The term is used in the AA 12 and 12 about we must be transformed in order to transcend this disease. We have to change in order to rise above this disease and be free from the obsession. And that's only through the step work. It's only after the third step and all the actions that we take. And if you hang out for a while and you start to see who has what I want, you know, how come that woman always seems calm at the meeting, you know? There's a group of people in recovery that they must ride sailboats. They know how to adjust for the wind. You know, that's what I want. And I believe that comes through the step work. And when you can weather the storms of life and adjust your sails, I don't think in the long run we're as inclined to pick up food as we were before, because we do so much work on transformation. I've learned to ask when I have a choice, and I know I have a choice if I'm going to indulge in these character defects. Is this action I'm about to take, or this thing I'm about to say, is it going to allow the grace of God to enter me and expel the exception to that obsession today? I don't think so. Well, maybe I ought to keep my big mouth shut. Is this action going to move me further in recovery or not? Well, maybe I ought to just, you know, again, keep my big mouth shut. I've learned to pause before I ask, are you the effing sweet and low police? Am I always successful? No. But I've learned to pause, just like I've learned to pause and not pick up food. I've learned to pause and not indulge in my character defects. Now, I'm going to open up. We have a few minutes if you have any questions for our two speakers.
Hi, I'm Matt. I'm also
Speak up, Matt.
I'm Matt. I'm also going to
Hi, Matt.
I'll be doing a fifth step with the sponsee, and I'm going to be doing it through the big book. It says immediately following, like the way I did it with sponsors. But do you actually like have your sponsees come up with the list of defects, or do you have a list that you're jotting down as you're doing it, or do you ask them questions as you're going through after you've done the fifth step?
I've done all of the above. I've done all of the above. I just kind of go with what feels right at that moment. But the fifth step that I'm listening to is not about me and what I've done. And that's the thing I have to keep mindful of. I have to give the person an opportunity to speak and to be heard, and I must be present. And if I find that it takes me out of being present to be writing down what my observations are, then I put the pen down. So.
Thank you.
Let's see. I believe that working through the steps is a personal journey. You know, my sponsees will say, oh my God, you're so amazing. I just sit there and listen. That's all I do. They're the ones that are doing the amazing work. So like I said, as I go through the fourth step, certain things just stand out. You know, I can see them. The person who's doing it can see them. I find that the remaining steps write themselves after you go through the fourth and fifth steps. I'll whip out this list afterwards and say, oh, by the way, you might have missed some, so why don't you take a look? But other than that, I think it's more of a personal type journey if it can be.